How do you create, develop, and cultivate leadership in your organization? Imagine what can happen when you have mission-minded leaders and enthusiastic team members who believe they can build business as a force for good. Hi, everybody. My name is Jason Lippert, the CEO at LCI Industries, and I welcome you to this edition of Built to Lead podcast. We are delighted to share the real-life experiences of others who have courageously stepped into the power of creating a culture that feels like family, a culture where every team member has a deep sense of purpose. Take what you hear today and be inspired to build a culture of caring, giving, and leading in your organization. Amazing things happen when you place people at the core of what you do every day. Welcome to this edition of Built to Lead.
Welcome back to the Built to Lead podcast here at Lippert. This is Edgar Cabello, your host, with a couple of friends today. Joining me is my good buddy and the director of the Lippert Academy for Leadership. This is Mr. Bill Coughlin. Bill, welcome.
Thank you, Edgar. Good to be with you.
Always good to be with you, my friend. And we have a very special, not that Bill's not very special, but we have a little extra special guest today. And new to Lippert, certainly new to our listening community here. And our new leader, Adam Kronk. Adam, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me, Edgar.
And welcome to Lippert.
Thanks.
Yeah. Been here for, how long now?
5 weeks, 6 weeks, something like that.
Just toes in the water, huh?
Yeah. Man, drinking Fantastic. From the firehouse, loving it.
So, really want to give people an opportunity to get to know who you are. Bill, just tell them a little bit about like where this whole journey started, and then we're going to kind of come up to current day when Adam joins a team. But like you were here kind of at the genesis of this thing. So, tell a little bit about the whole leadership development journey before we meet Adam and who can kind of bring us to like why he's here, what's the game plan moving ahead, and get to learn a little bit about him and where he comes from.
Yeah, I would tell you that the journey happened or started to happen just over 10 years ago. Mike Gardy was here. He was one of our pioneers, and he came in as a consultant for 90 days, and he did such a good job and had such an impact that the company said, hey, Mike, why don't you put your consulting business on the blocks, and why don't you come on full-time? So Mike got on full-time, and I came on shortly after that. And, you know, back in the days, we were a very command and control organization. We had a turnover rate of about 131% when I came through the door. The company was a wonderful company and made money every year, but could they be better and could they become more people-centric and take care of their organization and stop that bleeding of people just going out the door, right? And so we started with a mission statement and core values that we were going to hold each other accountable to, and then we started to really pay attention to our frontline team members and do things that would impact them and let them know how much they were valued. So we started fixing parking lots and bathrooms and break rooms and really wanted to say to them, hey, you're very important to us and we need to get more of a focus. And that's when people started to take note to say, hey, something's changing around here and I am a key player. And it's just continued to evolve. I mean, it's a journey. I think we all know that. I don't know if we ever hit the finish line to this because it's constant change. But I'll tell you, I think we're doing some great things over the last 10 years, and it's going to be fun to see where we go in the future. So
Bill, help us understand a little bit. So I got some of the tactical moves there, like just improving facilities and a great way to express that you care for people, right? So, but tell us on the developmental front, like the leadership development piece of it, like what were some of the things that were happening in the early going? Like what kind of activities like would happen in the day-to-day business of leadership development?
Well, leadership development, we had our five core values: passion about winning and team play with trust, caring about people, honesty, integrity, and candor, positive attitude. We didn't want them to just be signs and posters. We wanted to live them. So how do you live them? We had to put some definition behind what do they mean? Because if I say passion about winning, just the three of us right here, winning might look a little bit different for all of us, right? Yeah. So we had to put some definition around that. And then we started to train to those things and say, all right, if these are going to be our value system, how are we going to live them out on a daily basis?
Yeah, that's right.
And then we started to look at some of our leaders. Leaders back in the day were picked because if you were the best welder, I'd put you in charge of the welders, right? But leadership, I think we know, is different than just being the best worker out there, right? There's a different skill set to lead others. So we got together, years ago when we brought all of our managers in from all of our outlying facilities. There were 65 people at the Hall of Fame, RV Hall of Fame, and we sat there and said, what does a great leader look like? And what do we want a great leader to be like at Lippert? And that's how we came up with our five leadership qualities. And those were people that were out there to say, hey, here's where I can hone my skills. And if we're bringing someone else on to be a leader, these are some of the things we look for. So now we start hiring based on character, not based on just competence to be a leader in your organization. And so, and then that takes a lot of training. We say communication, be an effective communicator. Well, what does that look like? Right. And so it's just been an evolution of right living those things and talking about them and holding each other accountable to them.
So, and the reason I, you know, we allotted the time to do that is because I think it helps people understand, you know, where we're at these days. I mean, it was pretty basic stuff in the early going. It was still a lot like that when I joined, you know, almost 6 years ago. So those things have remained part of the landscape, but things have changed a great deal in the last almost decade now, right? So that this thing is evolving. It's kind of mushrooming. I mean, we're working on different types of things these days than what probably Mike started in on, you know, right when he jumped in. So it really has been an evolution. And so just sitting here with Adam, then he kind of represents like where that brings us up, you know, to this day. Here we are in 20, you know, saying goodbye to 2022 almost, my God, you know, like, and we're about ready to enter into a new era. And that's where Adam comes in. So Adam, like, help us understand where you came from a little bit. Just go for it, man. Like, tell your story and then what ended up bringing you our way.
Sure. Well, I've had a pretty interesting circuitous path, and I've almost exclusively worked in nonprofit work. So started out as a high school English teacher. I grew up outside the Detroit area, and I had an opportunity to teach in alongside the guy who was like my life hero, my wow. high school English teacher. And I started out doing that, really, really enjoyed it. And then I went back. I was at the University of Notre Dame for undergrad, and I went back and worked with their campus ministry program overseas. So we had six main study abroad programs that I served, and I was kind of like a one-man band. I would go get students who were studying over there involved in their local communities and service work, or take them on a retreat, take them on a pilgrimage, whatever it was, get them involved in living out their faith lives. Really, really cool work. I was based out of Dublin. It was kind of like I couldn't believe I was getting paid to do it.
Wow.
And it was a blast. And part of that job was being back on Notre Dame's campus over the summers to help out with running some retreats and whatever the department needed. And so I was volunteering at the Center for the Homeless in town, just as a side thing to do. And I knew the guy who was the executive director, and I really had a lot of respect for him. So I said, you know what, I'm gonna spend some time with some people who have a different life story than I do. Worked at the front desk. I mean, and it was rowdy, man. We'd be, you know, drug testing people in the middle of the night or whatever kind of needed to happen. And what I found was the human beings that I got to spend my time with really changed my view of human dignity a little bit, and made me understand that in a very real way, every single human being has the same God-given value that I do and you do. And so I ended up working there for 5 years. I was just going to volunteer on the side. I ended up taking a job, and I kind of cut my teeth, ended up being in charge of volunteers, and then eventually being the chief operating officer. And that's where I kind of learned, you know, in a small nonprofit, you get trusted to do things that you have no business, you know, or experience being able to do. And that's how you learn. It's an awesome way to learn. While I was doing that, I pursued my master's in nonprofit administration through Notre Dame, and, you know, figured I'd get the actual training that I probably needed, right? And so learned things like HR management, accounting, finance, things like that. While I was doing that, my wife, who I met at the time, also working at the Center for the Homeless, she and I, we didn't have any kids yet, and we thought, you know what, we had both lived abroad before, and we said, we'd like to go help do what we do in a developing country. In hindsight, might have been a little bit self-important, a little bit naive. Hey, we'll go save the world. But we ended up connecting with another Notre Dame grad who was running an educational nonprofit in rural Cambodia. So they needed my skill set and my wife's skill set. She's always been in fundraising, and so sight unseen, we quit our jobs, sold our house, put our stuff in a storage unit, and got on a plane to Siem Reap. Got off the plane, we were like, I guess this is where we live now.
Oh,
and it was such an adventure.
Yeah.
And it actually made the social issues we had been working with in the States kind of pale in comparison in terms of just the level of need and also the complexity of the approach of trying to help in a sustainable way. Really, really enjoyed that work. We were basically trying to help the local villages get more involved in their own school system. So if you can believe it, over there, the public funding for schools is so inadequate that teachers have to basically raise money some other way to make ends meet. So almost all of them were rice farmers as well. A lot of them sending their young kids across the Thai border to make money and come home and support the family. And so we were trying to figure out ways to make their schools more doable. It was, I'm telling you, it was a crazy learning experience. And it was all the cliches about I got more out of it than I put into it were definitely true, right? While we were over there, my father had been diagnosed with cancer. My wife's aunt died unexpectedly. And we were just so far from our families. Mm-hmm. So we ended up after about 2 years coming back. And the same woman who had connected me with this opportunity in Cambodia was the dean of the business school at Notre Dame at the time. And she had secured a gift from Deloitte, a $10 million gift to start a Center for Ethical Leadership out of the business school, focused specifically on character and integrity in business. How do you work with Fortune 500 companies to just make it more likely that people are able to do the right thing? Because people do want to do the right thing at their core. Mm-hmm. How do you make it more? How do you hire for it? As you mentioned, Bill, how do you select on character? How do you foster that when there can be competing, you know, incentives and all of that? So did that for about 5 years. Absolutely loved it. Also got to teach intro to business ethics to a bunch of sophomore business students at the time, which was a blast because they came in like, here's my required ethics class. This ought to be interesting. And from there, I could just surprise and delight. Yeah. And we had a lot of fun. And I was really, really enjoying that. And then, and this is just another kind of interesting twist in the road. There was a boarding school, a small boarding high school, about half an hour down the road in La Porte. And my wife's youngest brother was coaching basketball there. And they have a really good basketball team. And so we would go to some of the games. And I the only things I knew about that school, it's called Lalamere School. I knew that they had a really good basketball program and that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, John Roberts, was an alum.
Oh.
So those two things, and it's a tiny little school. I was like, mm-hmm. Well, those two things don't, I mean, they're just kind of random things to be true of the same small school. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law said, Adam, you know, I could totally see you working here someday. And like, I could picture you being the head of school. And I said, well, that'd be really cool in the movie version, but I'm not qualified to do that job. I would never get that job. And I ended up getting to know their former head of school, and I just was really intrigued by the place. They had an overt focus on character formation. And so I ended up, it's kind of a long story. I don't tell any short stories, but it's kind of a long story. I ended up calling the guy who was running the search. And I said, hey, I know it's late in the game and I have a very atypical background, but I just can't get it out of my head that I ought to give you a buzz and you know, throw my hat in the ring. And he looked at my background and we talked a little bit. He said, you know, you have a very, very non-traditional background for this job. I said, yes, that's exactly, that's what I said. I called you and I said that, right? And so, but they had a cancellation. They had like three finalists for the job. They had a cancellation. They said, well, we already have this gamut of interviews lined up. May as well just put you through, yep. Right? So, you know, and my wife said to me, well, you better just at least show up and see how it goes. All they're going to do is tell you no, right? And then you'll can check that box, right? So I showed up, a little bit of a whim, and by the time I was done with the interview process, I wanted that job so bad. Wow. And then I was like, nah, now I'm not going to get it. And then it's, you know, but it so happened that they were looking for kind of the lens that I had on what they were trying to do. It was a good fit. And so my wife and I, we had two kids at the time. We moved out to campus. Actually, our third son was born 18 hours after we moved in, a month early. So, you know, all of our stuff was in boxes.
What timing.
And yeah. Perfect. Yeah. That's how Teddy is. He's always on his own schedule. It's great. It's delightful. And so we moved, we lived on campus for about 6.5 years. Really, really incredible experience. And one of the things I learned is just the ability to do education the right way and foster the growth of character. when you can build significant relationships with people.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a luxury because it was such a small school. We had 200 mm-hmm. students. So you could really, you knew
get
everybody.
To know, right?
Yes.
Yeah, you could know all of them.
That's right. And especially as an adolescent, for fostering character, it really happens when people know who you are, mm-hmm. not just in the classroom, but in the dorm and on the court and in the dining hall. There's no faking it because people, you know, you're here 24 hours a day, right? And so really, really loved what I was doing, not looking to leave at all. And I'm sitting at my desk, June 29th this summer, I get a text on my phone from a number I don't have in my phone saying, hey, would you have any interest in talking about in culture and leadership development at Lippert? And then the next text was, oh, sorry, this is Jason Lippert, which I thought was funny.
Just in case.
Yeah, right. And so, oh, okay, yes. I knew who Jason was. Just kind of through some social circles, and I always had a lot of admiration for what Lippert did. And interestingly, anybody I knew who worked at Lippert, they were always saying, you should come work at Lippert, right? And mm-hmm. which is a pretty good sign of culture in itself, right? People who want the people they know to come join the team.
Absolutely.
And so I really had no intention of seriously considering the job, but I'm a take the meeting kind of guy. Couldn't hurt. I was like, well, maybe I'll convince Jason to send his youngest kids to La Lamere or something like that, right? So we get together and we just have a conversation, I don't know, for probably 2.5 hours where it was clear to me that the journey, this cultural journey that you were describing, Bill, is not it's not lip service. It's not something that Jason feels like, well, this would be good marketing for the company or something like that. He believes it to his core. And one of the things I learned doing that Center for Ethical Leadership at Notre Dame was, you can have the greatest value statement in the world. You can have the best list of qualities out there. If the people at the very top of the company don't believe it to their core, it's a total waste of time.
Yeah.
And a lot of big, I hate to say this, but a lot of big companies, they have great programs around this, and it's because it was part of some, like, you know, agreement after they got dinged for doing the wrong thing. And so now they, right? But like, you can tell it's not part of the DNA of the place. Mm-hmm, sure. It's more just like a box to check. And so Jason and I had, you know, I walked out of that meeting just like, man, this is really, really intriguing to me. And I would love to be able to be a part of this and have that impact on. My understanding is this: we want every single team member who's a part of this organization to be better off for being a part of Lippert. And that is a pretty high bar, and that is not necessarily how the manufacturing industry typically is. It's like, it's a pretty revolutionary thing to try to do.
Absolutely.
And so then you start thinking about kind of the American dream and the Rust Belt and this idea that, hey, can you really earn a living with a blue collar job or all that stuff? And it's a pretty compelling thing to say, I think we ought to really give it a shot. Mm-hmm. And Lippert has done so much already. I to be honest, it's people, you know, people here, you've got a new job. And so in small talk, you're at a cocktail party. Hey, how do you like the new gig? And it's like, I freak people out with my answer. I was like, dude, I love it. I love it. I can't believe I get to do this, right? And this team, I mean, the two of you and everybody I've gotten to meet, it's good human beings who are rallied around a cause that is about more than just making the bottom line. And it's by the way, it's about making business better through pursuing really, really at its core, how do we make it true that we're all better off for coming to work here every day? So that's how I got here in, what was that, about 30 seconds?
That was 30 seconds. Okay. Yeah, just a little beyond, I'd say. But great. I mean, that was the idea. I mean, we really wanted you to tell a bit of your story just to kind of help familiarize. I mean, we're learning something just listening to you right now. So, I mean, that's how early on in the game that we are. But the more that our people can kind of understand that, it sounds like a perfect on-ramp for what you just jumped into. And even your descriptors for, you know, what you're in and what you've done most recently. I mean, it makes a ton of sense, right?
Yeah, it's education and it's people and it's a passion for others. I mean, everything that you're talking about that you've done in your past, all relationships. Yes.
Amen. So, you know, it's interesting. I'm pursuing this doctorate degree through Vanderbilt, through their College of Education, and I was about halfway done with it when I made this leap. And so I had a couple of people say, well, are you going to finish that now that you're getting out of education? I was like, I'm not getting out of education at all.
Yeah.
Right? It's a program called Leadership and Learning in Organizations. And it's all about basically how do groups of people learn stuff?
We are your laboratory now.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's just like being, you know, it's like a big school system.
Yeah. I was going to say, because you go from 200 to about 15,000 people now. So
right.
This episode of Lippert Built to Lead podcast is brought to you by the Lippert Academy for Leadership, the team committed to enhancing your organization's leadership and cultural goals with strategic leadership development programs, on-site training, executive coaching, speaking engagement, and customized solutions. Find out how to get your organization involved at www.lci1.com/academy. Or send us a message at academy@lci1.com. That's academy@lci1.com.
So let me ask you this. Talk about, and I know it's only been 5 weeks, but what do you see as the largest difference between how the education system works and the pace of Lippert?
Wow. Yeah, night and day. So I used to laugh when I was at Notre Dame because I was kind of the go-between between Deloitte, who operates in the for-profit context, and academia. And so I used to laugh with Deloitte because they'd say, all right, well, how's this initiative coming? And I'd say, well, you know, I met with some folks in the dean's office or wherever it is, and we're going to explore that for next academic year. And so it was, you know, and it might be October. It's like, so 8 months from now then, right? And we were just laughing because the unit of time was this semester or next semester, and the unit of time in the real world is today or tomorrow, how about 15 minutes from now, right? And so it was interesting when I sat down with Jason, some of the group presidents here. By the way, that was another thing I left out. It wasn't just that Jason convinced me that he really cared about it, but when I went in for this interview, Jamie and Andy Murray and Andy Pocock and Ryan Smith, and I expected, just given their scope of responsibilities, all right, Jason wants me to, you know, meet him and all that, but they've got other fish to fry. They were so personally invested in talking about culture and leadership development. It was not like a rubber stamp thing. I actually walked out of that. I mean, it was an interview, but it didn't feel like an interview. It felt like, I don't know, like we were sitting around talking about stuff that we all really, really cared about. And I remember calling my wife and I said, that was the best meeting I've ever had, like, period.
And I think it was an interview.
Yeah, right. And I hope they thought it went as well as I thought it went, right? But anyway, in that process, I think it was Ryan who said, so just so you know, speed and culture, those are basically our secret sauce, speed and culture. And I was like, well, I'm with you on the culture part. And on the speed part, I got to be honest, it's probably going to be an adjustment, right? And
it's fitting that came from Smith.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
it does not surprise me.
And he was not lying. It is very fast-paced here. And I think, you know, one of the ways I view what we're trying to do is, and yet I guess you have to be careful saying this to Jason or Ryan, but is to slow down the game. And what I mean, I don't mean slow down the pace of our business. I mean to slow down the game for our people. So if you think about it from a sports analogy, if you really, really understand a game, the more you understand it, the more you're able to see what's going on real time. And I think that's really our goal is to try to, it's not make the pace slower. It's make the pace more doable for our folks because they know not only how to win, but what a win looks like.
Yes.
And the old kind of the right results the right way. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because I remember we had that conversation early on and it just reminded me of like how ball players would prepare for a game. I mean, they spend a lot of time in the film room, right? And so what we do with leaders a lot is like you pull them out of the action for a minute. That's where the coaching happens. That's where some of the training elements take place. And you do get, for just a moment, you get to slow the thing down a little bit, right? and it gets reflective and it gets conversational and people are actually thinking through maybe a decision that they just made or a conversation they just had, or maybe they just lost their mind on somebody and they just want to kind of retrack time. You don't get to do that actually, but how can we keep that from not occurring time and time again? Mm-hmm. You're going to say.
Yeah, well, I believe in the old philosophy too. Sometimes you have to slow down to speed up.
Totally.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's important. And many times if we're not intentional about that, we don't take the time to slow down because there's always something else that we have to get to.
That's right. And, you know, people say you learn from experience. Mm-hmm. Well, you learn from experience plus reflection, right? So if you never, to your point, Edgar, if you never take a quick time out and say, all right, so this thing just happened. And by the way, I always say, if something didn't go well, great. That's the best learning opportunity we have. Right. You know, we can go do a training just kind of theoretically in a sterile environment and say, well, here's how to be a leader. But what you really learn it by, you know, getting some bumps and bruises and saying, what would I have done differently? And so I really think it's that reflection plus experience piece. And then it's about meeting them where they are. Yeah. So I mean, you guys live this every day, but my whole thing is, hey, if I'm going to meet with somebody, I don't want to meet in my office. Let's come to your context. Sure. Let's see what's going on. You know, meet you where you are and really have that attitude of, I'm not here to tell you anything. I'm here to listen and then help kind of draw out and foster that learning process. Yeah.
I think that's, I always reference this book. It's called The Master Coach. Mm-hmm. And it talks about not giving the answers, but asking the right questions, right? And that's truly what it's about on leadership.
Absolutely.
Drawing it out of other people. So,
yeah.
You said something earlier, Adam, with regard to just when people ask you about what you just got yourself into, right? You
know? Yeah.
And it's funny because I just met with somebody just yesterday who's been with us for about a year and came out of a leadership development program that we do here, struggling right now, in mm-hmm. all honesty. And he says, but I love it here. What he said was, it's like, where could I go where I'm going through a tough time, and he's having a tough time professionally, he's having a little bit of difficulty personally. He's like, where could I go and have a conversation like this? We ended up at a coffee shop meeting, by the way, you know, kind of literally needed to pull him out of the action.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe somewhat of a triage type of a situation. And so we have people in our organization that are in manufacturing. I mean, they're doing the sweaty work.
Yeah.
And those are the kinds of stories that come back to us. And we're paying attention to the humanity and to what it's like to be a human being to work in a manufacturing setting. And I think that's a lot of times where what people don't get, they don't connect the dots. Like, hey, wait a minute, how does this actually work functionally? And it's just like, we're just kind of people paying attention to each other, mm-hmm. being attentive to the real life, you know, situations that are arising and the opportunity to build into people's lives. And for 10 years now, Bill, it's just been making a big difference. And have we perfected this thing? Probably not even close. You know what I mean? But we've definitely evolved. And having you with us, Adam, like, gives us a really cool opportunity to evolve into the next level, to the next stage, to the next iteration of what we're becoming. Mm-hmm. And so I guess to that end, like, what do you see, like, in your mind's eye, as now you've gotten just a little bit of a snapshot of what Lippert is currently, mm-hmm. like, what do you see moving forward? Like, what are some of the images or ideas that come to mind for you?
Yeah, I first of all, I just want to say, I think it's worth pointing out or just kind of highlighting something you just said, which is essentially the idea that team members are encouraged to bring their actual selves to work. And not, I mean, I have friends who work for, you know, successful companies, all that stuff. And it's pretty clear that, like, who you are when you're not at work is not relevant. It's really not anybody's business. It's not something we would talk about. And if we do need to talk about it, it's like, what is something so bad that we need to do it? And that is just so not how it is here. And it is important to say, I think that's one of the reasons people want other people to come work here, or they want to stay. Even if it's a challenging, this is not an easy place to work by any stretch,
mm-hmm. No,
but it's fulfilling because you're bringing your actual self here. And that, I think, that's an incredible starting point and something I don't take for granted at all, you know?
Yeah, I think it's so old school that we used to tell people, hey, check that personal stuff at the door.
Right.
Right. When you get in here, now I want you focused on Lippert.
Right.
But it's not real. Right.
That's
and
right.
So when you foster an environment where people can bring their whole self, right, bring it all, and we're going to work through it. We're running a business. But boy, there's the right way and wrong way to run the business, right? And we can do it through caring for our people and taking care of our people.
Yeah. And we just believe like our core values really are core. I mean, they really do represent our gut.
Yeah,
right. And so we've seen it happen time and time again, and I think it's proved out because it's still an aggressively growing company. And you know, we continue to evolve on the business front and certainly on the cultural front. And we're learning every single day that the more we genuinely care about people, the more we genuinely and authentically and with the right resources invest in people's lives, performance seems to follow that.
100%.
It just seems like everybody gets a little bit better the more we extend ourselves in those ways. And so when I pull people into the organization, you've done it too a million times, Bill, where you take somebody on a plant tour and then you stop and have a conversation like, wait a minute, we don't want to bother them. Like, no, this is in bounds. Yeah. Like to stop, to talk, to look each other in the eye, to have a real conversation, understanding, I know you got to get back to work, but can we call time out just for a second? And that's what happens, and that people smile when they're doing things that maybe in your mind's eye might seem a little menial, but like, I've got to tell you, like people bring so much character and they make the things that we do feel very noble.
Yeah.
That's what I really love about the whole manufacturing setting. Mm-hmm. And then the more that we inject this human element, man, and say yes to it, like the more we're seeing advancement and growth and development happen.
That's right. That's right. And so to riff a little bit on kind of where kind of in my mind's eye at a philosophical level where I hope we can head. I'll tell you a quick story. You may have heard it before. And this is one of these management things that I don't know if it's true or not, but apparently early 60s, JFK is going to, you know, it's the mission to the moon, which was such a galvanizing thing, right? Mm-hmm. And so the story goes that he's touring the NASA headquarters and he walks past a guy who's got a mop in his hand and he says, I'm Jack Kennedy, you know, what do you do for NASA? And the guy looks him right in the eye and says, I'm helping put a man on the moon. And that, now that's a really high bar. That would be like the gold standard. But the idea would be, if I'm welding a chassis, if I'm driving a forklift, the sense that I am a part of something that is bigger than myself, I am building something that families are going to use, right? Or I'm, you know, there's so much community service and community involvement that goes on here. And my hope is to try to tease out a bit of a through line between what people are doing during the day, like for their paid job,
sure,
and why they would be involved in the communities in which we live and work. And to me, the through line is relatively clear, is that we're built to serve people, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so when we're here, we're building things that can be used that will serve people. And then what do we do with our time and our energy when we're off the clock? Same stuff.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
what actually gives human beings lasting satisfaction.
That's right.
Is that sense of I'm serving a mission that's bigger than me. And that ends up kind of being that glue that brings people together. If you can combine that sense of purpose with the dignity and the engagement and the personal connection and, hey, I care about who you are as a human being, I mean, that's a killer combo.
It is. Mm-hmm. I love it. That's very well said. And we so appreciate the vision and the creativity. I can hear it bubbling already that you inject into the organization, man. It's great to have you on the team.
Oh, thanks.
And
man,
we're very grateful for the coming together, you know, of you and the background and your family and with where we've been. So, bro, thank you so much for just kind of sharing a little bit about what the pathway looked like in the early going. I guess, Adam, before we close things out here, we'd want to hear a little bit about you and your family, mm-hmm. and tell us about your wife, your children, and what this is all doing to them. I'm sure there's a story there as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, so my wife, Jacqueline, she runs the Boys and Girls Clubs in St. Joe County, and she's not screwing around. So she took that job, I think, about 6 weeks before COVID hit.
Okay.
So the job, and she had been, She used to be their development director. Then she was on the board there for a while. She was working part-time for a family foundation of some friends of ours with a really cool mission. And when the opportunity arose, it was a little bit earlier in the life of our family than she was looking to go back full-time, because our youngest, so we've got four kids, three boys and a girl, and they're 10, 8, 6, and 4. So Sienna, yes. Sienna's the caboose, and she runs the house for sure. but she was still a little bit new, and you know, it was kind of like, I don't know that this opportunity is going to be here in a year or two. So, you know, dive in. And then COVID. So the job she took was a very different job from the job it became very quickly. And her passion has always been about helping as many human beings as you can. And again, just treating everyone we come across with dignity. That's been kind of our mantra as a couple. And so we're doing that, and we're real proud of our four kids. It's great whether they, you know, whether they're spending time at the Boys and Girls Club or they were spending time on the campus of La Lemire. Mm-hmm. We've always kind of, and I haven't brought them around any plants yet. I don't know how you know, they might, I don't know if they can sign a waiver or not. You probably wouldn't want Teddy running around. You know, he'd end up powder coated before he went home. But just the idea that, yeah. that you know, that we learn more from them every single day than anything else, and they're a constant reminder of what's important, you know, and honestly, one of the stories Jason told me that really resonated when I was interviewing was, he said there was someone who had been working for a different manufacturing company, and he joined Leopard, and he was here for about 6 months, and he wrote Jason a note, and he said, you know, I was making dinner for my 6-year-old the other day, and he said, Daddy, how come you're not angry when you come home from work anymore? Mm-hmm. And just that idea that you know, at Pocock, when he was talking to me, he put it this way. He said, if we have 15,000 team members, that's on average 60,000 belly buttons, right? So you got spouse and on average probably two kids.
Yeah.
That's 60,000 human lives that are either better off, mm-hmm. you know, at the end of the day, in those moments where you're, you know, you're tired and all that stuff. But if you've been treated like a human being and feel that you have some value when you're at work, you spend more of your life doing work than doing anything That's else, true. Right? Mm-hmm. If we can be doing that, that does, I truly believe in my heart, that trickles down into the families. And now those kids are more likely to grow up with a sense of worth and value and pass that on. That's changing the world.
Absolutely. Fantastic, man.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Yep.
I just got a couple zingers to throw at you.
Okay, I'm ready.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
You kind of gave us a peek behind the curtain. So think one. All right, I got one. I got two questions for you.
Okay.
Okay, the book that everybody should read, what would you say?
Ooh, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl.
Yeah.
You know, his whole, I mean, so that guy, he was a doctor and a psychotherapist before the Holocaust. He did survive the Holocaust. And what he noticed, I mean, it's an incredible, I've read it, I've taught it, I've probably read it 10 times, and every time I read it, I get something else out of it. It's a short book. Yeah. It's not for the faint of heart. But the idea is, his whole theory was, what kept people going in the most dire possible circumstances was a sense of meaning and mm-hmm. purpose, and that they could get through pretty much anything if they had that in a strong enough way. And so that's my go-to recommendation.
Well, you went deep. All right. I remember that from college. Might maybe time to pick that up again.
Read it again. You'd love it. You'd love it again.
What are you listening to music-wise?
Okay, so there's a band called the Black Pumas, and they don't have a whole lot of albums, but I figured this thing out on Spotify where, you know, if you're looking for an artist, you can just put on so it's called Black Pumas Radio, basically.
Yeah,
so it's like,
right.
If you like this, you'd probably like that.
Yeah.
That's been my jam, man.
No,
it has not let me down. It always gets me in a
Pumas.
Good
mood.
Black Pumas. That's
yeah.
right.
You'll just,
take
trust
a
me.
Note for you, would you?
Yeah, write that down.
I'll write that down for you.
And I'll tell you what, Bill, if you're like me, I just feel cooler when I'm listening to the Black Pumas, I'll tell you.
Just telling people you listen to that
makes
you cool.
There you go.
Yes, sir.
And I need some of that right now. I need that coolness.
There you go. Oh, there you go.
Favorite place you've been to in the world?
There is a place in the... Okay. It's hard to pick one. Can I pick two?
No.
Just pick one.
No, just pick one and let's go.
We're almost out of time.
We're almost out of time. Come on.
Okay. So you go to Assisi in Italy, and everybody thinks, oh yeah, I've been to Assisi, and there's the town there. Very, very cool. Mm-hmm. But you have to hike up to this hermitage, which is where St. Francis used to hang out. And that view over this valley where you can see like the sun coming up and the moon coming up and all that stuff, it just that view to me, I don't think I've ever seen a more beautiful view.
Wow.
Very stellar. Cool.
Very cool.
I love it. Great
good answer.
Thanks,
yeah,
my friend.
Good answer.
Hey, Adam, thank you again.
Oh my gosh, what a pleasure.
So appreciate you, you know, giving us all an opportunity to get to know you a little bit better. Bill, always good hanging out with you. Yeah. And of course, if you're listening with us right now, we've kind of dug up some things from the past in terms of our journey here at Lippert, and we continue to go forward. And Adam is the guy that's going to help us get there by joining our team and becoming part of the family. And man, we're excited about what you see in your mind's eye. I love what we heard from you today. And so if you're out there and you're looking for some help, and maybe you're just kind of at the trailhead of having some vision about what your cultural transformation could look like, give us a call, or you can email us at academy1@lci1.com. That's academy@lci1.com. We're going to have to edit the hell out of this. Anyways, yes, reach out to us, please, at academy@lci1.com. Thank you for joining us today. Thanks again, Adam. Thanks again, Bill, for this episode. And we'll see you all next time.
Thanks for listening to today's Built to Lead episode. If you have a story to share or are interested in learning how you can be a business as a force for good, please visit us at www.lci1.com/academy. And please follow Lippert on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, and Twitter. Thank you.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast belong solely to the speaker and do not necessarily reflect the view or mission of Lippert Components Incorporated.